Hello and welcome back to And the Winner Is, where we review each winner of the Best Picture Oscar one at a time. And this week's episode, we will be discussing the 1989 winner, Rain Man. And joining me, as always, my co-host, Tony.
Hello.
Evening, mate. You okay?
Not too bad, yeah, yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. We're a little bit later this month. Not much later, but just a little bit.
Yeah.
So we're going to have two shows out in the space of about a week. So let's plow on with this one. So as I said, we're discussing the 1989 winner Rain Man, starring Dustin Hoffman and Tom Cruise. So a couple of little facts. Was released in the US on the 16th of December 1988. We didn't get it for until the 3rd of March 1989. So there was quite a big gap there. I know it was a usual thing, as we say every time, but that seems a little bit longer than normal.
I vaguely remember it coming out 88, because it's kind of about a year or so before I started going to the movies regularly, once I sort of was free and sort of out of college and stuff, and had a bit of work and money.
Yeah. So it had a tiny, tiny budget of $25 million. Do you want to take a guess at how much it took?
Oh, damn it. I did see somewhere. 200?
$354,825,435 on a budget of 25, which is just unbelievable. So let's take a dive into some more facts. So Hoffman actually tried to quit the role after 3 weeks and told them to hire Richard Dreyfuss. Raymond's quote that Qantas has never lost a plane is still correct to this day.
Wow.
They still have 100% record.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Hoffman and Cruise weren't particularly convinced by the film and called it two schmucks in a car. It was actually Hans Zimmer's first score in Hollywood, and it lasts a length of 12 minutes. There is only 12 minutes worth of music in this film. So that's absolutely ridiculous.
Because it feels like it's throughout the film.
Yeah, no, he only wrote 12 minutes worth of music for the film. Hoffman insisted that Babbitt was an autistic savant, not mentally disabled, which caused director Martin Brest to quit.
That was the original script then, I guess.
Yeah. The names Raymond looks up in the phone book are actually Dustin Hoffman's in-laws. until 1995, it was the highest grossing winner until Forrest Gump, which we've already reviewed. So if you haven't heard that one, go back and listen to it. This was one of twice in the 1980s that Tom Cruise caused a massive jump in sales for Ray-Ban. The other was Risky Business. With this film, it caused a 15% increase in sales. With the Wayfarers in Risky Business, it was actually a larger jump. So this kind of paled in comparison, but was still a massive jump. Steven Spielberg was actually originally set to direct it, but George Lucas required him to prep for Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. So he had to rule himself out, which was when it was passed to Martin Brest. It was the first time the words "and the Oscar goes to" were used. Previously it had been "and the winner is," which is where we get our title from. It was a big thing when that changed, so that was partially the reason why I picked it, because it's kind of a hot topic with the Oscars that they don't say it anymore. It was Bonnie Hunt's screen debut.
Yes, spotted in the film.
Originally Dustin Hoffman wanted Bill Murray to play Charlie. It was interesting because the script was sent to both of them and an offer was made, but it was actually originally offered the other way round. Bill Murray was offered Raymond and Hoffman was offered Charlie, but Hoffman wanted to play Charlie and was the first one to reply. Bill Murray never actually read the script. He had no interest in it. So that was an interesting fact. Barry Levinson, who ended up directing the film, originally turned the film down as he was making Good Morning Vietnam.
Oh, yes, yeah, 87.
Yeah. It's the only film to win Best Picture and the Berlin Festival Golden Bear.
Wow.
So it was well thought of both in the mainstream and film festival wise. Despite playing brothers in this film, Dustin Hoffman is actually 25 years older than Tom Cruise. So there's quite a big gap between them. And so the last bit is just to touch on the films that it was up against. The four were The Accidental Tourist, Dangerous Liaisons, Mississippi Burning, and Working Girl.
I still, to this day, I don't think I've seen Accidental Tourist in full.
I don't. Yeah, I've definitely seen Dangerous Liaisons and Working Girl. Obviously, Dangerous Liaisons was made it.
Davis, William Hurt, Accidental Tourist.
Yes, and Gina Davis won Best Supporting Actress.
Yeah, I can't
see that film.
Walking a dog or something in the trailer.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've never seen it in full. Bizarre.
No, I haven't either. I've definitely seen Dangerous Liaisons because obviously that was remade in the 90s with Sarah Michelle Gellar in the lead role for Cruel Intentions. And I think everybody's pretty much seen Working Girl.
It's kind of one side effect of this show now is I'm having to sort of think about and try and check out some of the other nominees.
Yeah, and there's so many films that we already watch as it is. We're on our other show, For the Love of a Franchise, we've just finished the Harry Potter franchise and now we've jumped into Alien.
I'm just going to be
an accidental tourist, don't I? So, yeah, we've got plenty of films to watch. And with the comic book show, Biff Pal Bam, we're watching like TV shows every week. One finishes, we get a film, then another TV series, then another film. So we're constantly busy. And across the network, I'm busy with other films as well. This month, I've had to watch Romance in the Stone for our Patreon show, as well as Transformers, the first Transformers for our Universal Patreon show. So
there's worse things to be doing than watching movies.
Yeah, exactly. So let's jump into the film. My first thought was, oh, how 80s for an opening of a film. It felt so much like plenty of even Tom Cruise films in the 80s.
Yeah, and lots of red cars.
Yeah, and I said, what a group of cars. I can't talk again. Pop my teeth back in. So I said I didn't know it was Hans Zimmer that had done the score, as we talked about in those notes. Yeah. There isn't much of it, but his name does come up in the opening credits, and I was quite surprised by that.
Yeah,
that his work went all the way back, because I wasn't really aware of him kind of until the 2000s.
Yeah. Well, funny enough, I'd actually watched this about a year or two ago on BBC anyway. So it's kind of a little bits of the film was still in my head, and I vaguely remembering that. Oh, bloody hell, that's an early one. Because the only other one I remember from around that time was Thelma and Louise 91, I think.
Yeah.
Which I think was him as well.
Yeah, I would have thought so. Then I said, you can clearly tell this is pre-Scientology Tom Cruise, just from the opening scene. He doesn't feel as intense as he has done in recent years.
No.
And he came across as very cool in this film, which he quite clearly isn't anymore. Even with films like Mission Impossible, he doesn't come across as cool anymore. He comes across as very studious and serious would be the words that I would.
Even then, in this, you can see, and the films, you can see there's a confidence there, and he more than holds his own up against Hoffman.
Yeah,
throughout the film.
Yeah, he certainly does. His 80s and 90s films were superb. You can't go wrong with a lot of them. My next question is, why is Palm Springs such a sought-after place? I've never understood it. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's like a two-hour drive from LA. I never understand why celebrities love it so much.
Probably because it's a two-hour drive from LA.
Yeah, yeah. Then I said, it's a beautiful house that he lives in. There's no doubt about that. And then I said, oh, they pulled out the 80s/90s man bag, where he's carrying his suit in. It looks proper 80s/90s when he's dragging that around. My first thought on character wise is he is actually a bit of a dick.
He is, yeah. I noticed that I noticed a sort of something about him following his father, basically, and it's. Yeah. You can kind of see early on that why they didn't get on, because they were too alike.
Yeah, definitely. And then I said, I don't know what he's moaning about. The car is fantastic. Who'd moan about being given a car like that that's worth God knows how much money? But then let's dive into Hoffman at this point, because just from the word go, he is superb in this.
Yeah.
Just even the way he walks, the rigidness is really selling the problem. You don't even need to know that he has an issue. You can clearly see it. He's proper selling it.
The way he moves. And there's a bit later on where they're at the airport. I'm just jumping ahead in terms of the plot, where he's following behind Cruise, just like a little child catching up to his parents.
Yeah.
And it's so well done. Just these little subtle movements all the time.
And you look at, like I mentioned, that he wasn't a fan of his performance, so much so that he nearly quit after 3 weeks. And it was all filmed in order as well, apparently. Because it was done as like a road trip. They did it. They'd go to the next town along and do their next bit. So quite clearly from the word off, he got it nailed down. And it must just be that he didn't have belief in himself, because from what I'm seeing, he was just brilliant. Right from the word go.
It's one of his career highs, I think. It's a fantastic performance.
Yeah. And we've been lucky enough to watch another one of what I would claim is one of his career highs as well, earlier on this show with, why is the name escaping me?
Kramer versus Kramer.
Yeah, I couldn't remember the name of it for the life of me. You'd think I'd remember it, wouldn't you? I said some of the sequences couldn't be more 80s, like some of the shots of them driving along the road and things like that. It just feels...
Yeah, but even Zimmer's score...
Yeah,
at the start of his career, you can see it's an 80s influenced score, and you think of his scores now are very orchestral and quite booming and boom.
Well, that was one of the things that apparently they requested that he didn't use strings in this film. So that was quite interesting.
Yeah.
And I said, so far it just feels like Cruise's character is just being manipulative.
Yeah.
Well, nothing else.
Drop in at this point that we're talking about characters as well, is Susanna, Valeria Galino,
who's
somebody I've loved for a long time. Even though I've forgotten that this is probably the first thing I saw her in on video.
Yeah.
I think the first time was Hot Shots.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was 91, I think, or 1990, which was a couple of years after this. Yeah. And so she's been around for a couple of years, and she doesn't have a lot to work with, but she's really good in it. And she's
so lovely.
But he just treats her like a dick. he's a dick to her completely.
Yeah, and that's what my next point is. I said, what a chameleon Hoffman is, and to prove my point about Charlie, what a dick.
Yeah.
He's just so unlikable at this point of the film.
Yeah.
And obviously, that's the whole point of it, is that he changes over the course of the film, but is just... And I got a note further down that I just said, fuck me, nearly an hour in and Charlie is just an arsehole.
It's a long way in before you start to see the first changes in him, actually, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I said, LAX does not look like that anymore. Believe me, it's changed even since I last went through it. And that was, 10, 11 years ago, last time I went through LAX, and it's changed quite a lot since then, let alone 40 years ago, as it's heading towards how much it's changed. But I said at that point, seeing his breakdown is really quite heartbreaking, that he doesn't want to get on that plane. There is no way he is getting on it.
We've also just had, in this whole sequence, a great comedy moment. We're just flipping back to Susanna for a moment. When they have their row,
And
there's a couple of bits. Is that the hotel moaning bit is just genius, when he's watching them and listening and copying them. But also there's that great line where they're having their row, and you talk about him being a user, when he asks him whether he's been used, and he says yes, and then Cruise, he's answering a question from a half hour ago, and he's
it's brilliant. Yeah, it's fantastic. I said that a cross-country US trip has always been quite near to the top of my to-do list, but having watched this film, that it really sells how wonderful it is. And I said later on, I love Middle American architecture. It just fascinates me how different it is across the states.
It's a theme that Hollywood seems to go back to quite a bit. I mean, we've mentioned Thelma and Louise, and there's also the Johnny Depp film, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
it's a subject that they like to come back to quite a bit.
Yeah, definitely. I said I'm not quite sure this film would make it to a studio these days. I don't think this film would get made these days with everything. And don't get me wrong, I completely understand that this isn't a knock. With everything having to be as PC as it has to be these days, I think a studio would struggle to say, we know how to make this film. I think they would probably go, it's too close to the knuckle for us to make these days.
I think you're more likely to find it as an independent feature these days.
Yeah, definitely. Then I noted that there was an old school Nike ad on the TV. back then when it was only kind of just becoming what it is today, being a massive basketball nerd as I am these days, things like that catch my eye. Then we had the older lady who has been in loads here for me and Tony. Is this
when we get to the house and they want to watch the telly? Beth Grant, who was in, I think, Speed.
Yep. And probably most known for me and you as being the ghost in the wall in Angel in Cordelia's apartment.
Yes. I completely forgotten she was.
And she also plays the homeless lady in Friends that Phoebe gives her money to and gives her a football phone.
I recognize her from
I said the film looks fantastic. It was shot brilliantly. It still looks great. Hard to comprehend how his brain works. I could never understand it. I'm not going to beat around the bush. I suffer with anxiety and depression at times. I just don't understand how something like that works.
Yeah, people on the spectrum, and I have nothing but just admiration for anybody who has to have to deal with that themselves, and anybody with their lives as a spouse or a friend.
Yeah, definitely.
It's such an intense thing to deal with, and I think the film does it justice overall.
Yeah, it really does. I love the fact that he remembers the Beatles, of all things. He remembers the Beatles song. I think that's lovely. And I said that I'm guessing this scene will trigger the change in character, which it does. He starts to understand him. So that's quite nice. Then we get to old school Vegas with all the old casinos, the ones that you kind of remember from like the Rat Pack days and Elvis's days and things like that. They were still standing then.
I'm just going to jump in here and just mention briefly the photo and the revelation.
Yes.
And where we finally find out where the Rain Man comes from. And that scene is absolutely heartbreaking. And they're both so good in it.
Yeah, they really are. They're superb. As we've said, their performances, and certainly I know most people will look at Tom Cruise these days and go, oh, he's an action hero. Mission Impossible, but in his early days he obviously was a member of the Brat Pack. And most of those actors back then were kind of well known for their drama rather than what Tom has become these days. And really he's the only one that kind of came out of it in those kind of roles.
Established career,
The rest of them are kind of still doing the same type of thing, plodding along doing kind of dramedy stuff rather than coming out and being this big hero that Tom is these days. Sitting with the Vegas stuff, Charlie starts to warm to Raymond, but quite clearly is still using him at this point.
The seats are planted, like in that scene I mentioned, aren't they, with the photograph and the hot water, but it's only just starting to chip away at him.
I said that Cruise has attack eyebrows during some of these scenes. He very much has Peter Capaldi attack eyebrows.
We see another character actor at this point who has popped up in a lot of places. Most notably in Total Recall. That's Ray Baker.
Yes.
As the sort of casino security guy. It's a really nice sort of cameo, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I said, you also can spot Biff's Palace behind them out of the window. The hotel that was based on is still quite clearly standing in Vegas at that point. I did say that she becomes a little bit slutty at this point.
Oh, yes, exactly. Yes, because Susanna comes back at this point. And it's really nice to see her back because you think, well, they discarded her a bit early in the film.
Yeah.
But I was, because I watched this, I watched it about a year or so ago, and I was quite taken aback at the time how sort of playful she actually is.
Yeah.
But it's quite good because she's basically letting him experience, Ray experience something so wonderful and nice.
Yeah.
And again, Hoffman is great in that scene. The line, that delivery of wet is just so
fast. Yeah, definitely. I said that I do love that Tom Cruise's character does turn it around in the end. Yeah. And that he loves him. And he's more hurt by the fact that he didn't know he had the brother. That's the bigger problem in it, that he didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
And he didn't get the chance to know him. And that's quite a nice turnaround for the character in the end.
Yeah. Well, he has the confrontation with the doctor, doesn't he?
From the
chap from the I want to say hospital for shorter than where from the retreat that he's in.
Yeah, definitely. And that's heartbreaking. That really is his big problem, was that he didn't get to know him.
Yeah. And you feel for him. But he's got 15, 16, 20 years of lost life with this chap.
Yeah. Yeah. And I said it's another Dustin Hoffman film that ends in some kind of judgment that doesn't go the way of the main character.
No.
Obviously, to start with Kramer versus Kramer, he does lose.
Yeah.
But he gets the right thing in the end. Mm. With this one, it's the other way. He doesn't get what he wants, but it's probably the right thing that he doesn't. Mm. Despite the fact that it is heartbreaking that he has his rights taken away from him, that he wants to look after his brother and care for him, and he can't, he's not allowed to.
Yeah.
And it is heartbreaking, but when you look at it, it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, and they give you that nice sort of, just they undercut it with that talk about him going to see him in a couple of weeks, and it leaves the film with that sort of that belief that they're going to have some sort of relationship now going on over time, which is quite nice.
Yeah, definitely. Is there anything else you want to add before we give our final thoughts?
Just a couple of things. I think the word fart, just when they're in the phone box, it's just, again, there's just these great little moments of comedy that just undercuts all the sort of sadness and then the tension.
Yeah.
And that's a genius scene. I also scribbled down Simpsons gag, because when they get to Vegas, there's an episode where I think where Ned and Homer go to Vegas, and they're in a casino, and there's a couple of characters that are basically Ray and Charlie sat at the craps table, and Ray starts to lose it, and Homer just does it even worse.
No.
It's just genius. So it's a film that has even stood the test of time and has been an influence on other storytellers.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Other things I can just pick out from the running gag with who's on first is brilliant, and he will never get it. It's just, and again, at the start, Charlie's really pissed off by it. At the end, he's just frustrated because he will never get the comedy.
Yeah.
Brilliant. That fire alarm sequence that finally this Charlie understands why he can't look after him. It's just, again, that's another heartbreaking moment when he's just having such a bad turn with it, and you feel for both characters, that because they've both been deprived this relationship, even though only one of them would ever have really fully understood the relationship.
And it's
a film which sort of works on so many levels like that, about lost opportunities as much as anything, and also in some ways with moving on and grief. And also that you see, because Charlie lost a relationship with his father as well, because they were both too pig-headed.
Yeah.
And there's so many little layers and elements to it. And then, of course, we also get a nice director cameo at the end as well.
Yes.
Where Leveson pops up doing a Hitchcock.
Yeah, definitely. So I think clearly we've both enjoyed this film. I think we're both pretty much on the same page. My final notes was, cracking film that keeps you hooked with the ongoing involving relationship. I think that's the crux of the film is that relationship throughout it.
Absolutely.
So for me, I gave it 86 out of 100. I really enjoyed it, and I would quite happily watch it again in the same way that clearly you've watched it again, having only seen it recently, and still enjoyed it. And it's definitely something that I would go back and watch again.
Again, I'd say it's a great relationship piece. It's a nice comedy. Valerie is a little bit underused, but she's kind of only there just to move a bit of the plot on, which is a shame. As I say, the visuals are great. And I did jot down as a great score from Zimmer, even though there's only a little bit of it. Which is But I think that's because there's also, it's padded out with a lot of songs.
Yes.
That just pop up everywhere. So the soundtrack sort of plays in that. And it's a nice song list in there as well. And it's a thoroughly enjoyable film that you can easily go back and revisit in a few years' time, and it just pops up on the telly. One of those films you can just watch half an hour, the last half hour, or an hour in the middle, or whatever, and quite happily. And on that basis, I mean, for me, it's a 91.
So I think we're pretty similar. I know mine's slightly lower, but I think we're pretty much in the same thought that it's certainly worthy of winning. I don't think there's any doubt that it deserved to win that.
In what wasn't a bad list as well. There was a decent list of films, but some of them were probably a little bit sort of more fluffy. Like I think Working Girl was one of them. Up against, so there was a little bit of froth amongst the list, but it's a worthy winner, unlike some of the ones we've come across.
Yeah, definitely. So that's our thoughts on Rain Man, the 1989 winner. We will be back with another episode in just over around a week's time, where we will be reviewing the 1999 winner, Shakespeare in Love. Thank you for joining me, Tony.
No problem.
And we will see you on the next episode.
Good night.
See you somewhere down the road.
This podcast is part of the After Dark Podcast.